Welcome back to the show, everybody, and happy 2024. It is officially the first podcast of the fourth season and episode 70. That's pretty wild to think about that we're in our fourth season already. So thank you for listening. If you are a listener that's been with us since day one, or welcome if you're new. You're listening to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, the community that's exclusive to the EAS industry, where we believe that the magic that happens with our equine partners, it's not only fun for our participants, but it's a skill, it's a science, a business, and for so many of us, a place to belong. I'm your host, Katie Ott, OTCTRI here at Hetra. And today I have our usual guest, our usual suspect for the first episode of the year, and that is CEO of Hetra and occupational therapist, Edie Godden. So she's here to talk with us about kind of where she thinks the EAS industry is headed and kind of the challenges that Hetra faced this year and where we saw growth. She's here to talk to us about year 35. That's right. 35 years Hetra has been doing what we do, and we're just blessed every day to continue to do it. So as far as the podcast for this year, we've got some awesome things planned. Hetra University Live, if you haven't heard about it, we're going to do that live conference in person. Got a lot of good webinars planned for this year. The podcast is going from not every other week, but to three times a month. So you'll hear us on the first three Fridays of the month. That's going to be an increase. So look out for that. And the most exciting part, I think, is that we now have an Instagram. So go plug in with us on Instagram. I'm going to be posting a lot of just kind of candid things that happen around the Hetra barn and some education and things like that. So go connect with us in our community. Of course, we still have Patreon and Facebook as well. So excited for 2024, and thanks for joining us. Enjoy. Welcome back to the show, Edie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Of course. So this will be the first episode everyone is hearing in season four of the podcast.
That seems unbelievable to me.
I know. 2024, fourth season.
So exciting. I really have been impressed by how you've been able to really grow this podcast and really provide some valuable education to the EAS community, which is really important.
Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of new listeners and new people get plugged in with us here in the last, you know, obviously year, a couple years. If you haven't listened to any of Edie's previous episodes, she's been on the show a lot, but you have so far been the first episode of every season. And you sort of give us an update on how Hetra's doing and where we see us going and that kind of thing. Give people some food for thought for the coming year. So go back and listen to those previous, you know, kickoff season episodes, because they're always really good. So today I want to just kind of get your thoughts on an update and where you think Hetra has grown the most and what you're really proud of from 2023.
Yeah, so this is kind of a tradition for us
is
to have me on as the first guest, which I am very honored to be.
Wait, before we do all that, maybe someone doesn't know. Who are you, Edie?
Oh, good point. So I am the CEO here at Hetra. I'm also an occupational therapist, a certified therapeutic riding instructor, and a clinical specialist in hippotherapy. So I wear a lot of hats, and I still, my main job here is to do this CEO job, but I still spend some time in the arena because that's really important to me to, number one, because it fills my cup. But also really important. So I see how our organization is running and what issues are being encountered. And I think gives me more credibility with the staff and the volunteers.
100%. Yeah. I can see how that keeps you plugged in and apprised to the situation and what's happening in the barn, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So now that we know who you are, finish your thoughts on how Hetra has grown.
Yeah, so we have been on a really steady growth increase, I would say since forever. I don't think there's ever been a point where we've sat back and said, okay, here's what we
do.
Let's
all take a break.
We've reached our maximum capacity. And I think that's partly because there's so much need in the community and so many individuals that we can help. And we want to continue to be able to offer that in different ways in the community. So I would say this year, I know we've already seen a 33% increase in programming, and that isn't all of our programming numbers mm-hmm. yet. That's huge. And we kind of trend that way every year where we have a between 15 and 35, 50% increase in programming that we're offering. And I think one of the biggest pieces of that has been, I think several years ago, we really took a look at what could we add to our programming without tapping the resources of things like staff, horses, and volunteers.
Right. The stuff that costs us money, right, yeah. too, right, that affects the bottom line.
Exactly. And I think that is still a valuable community resource. And I think we have found different ways to do that. One of them is through our life skills program. That program was really growing up until COVID. COVID, that took a big hit. It took a long time for people to come back, but we've really seen a lot of growth in that program this year.
Describe life skills just a smidge for people if they're confused.
Sure. So life skills could be any group of people. Ours is typically those with developmental disabilities. It could be that they've already aged out of the school system, or it could be that they're still in the school system. Mm-hmm. They come out for two and a half hours a day. They work with one of our staff who happens to be an occupational therapist, typically one volunteer. They do activities around the barn, learning not only skills, but also those soft skills. So following directions, staying on task, working together as a team. And then they do a horse activity. So we still pull the horses in, but it's going to be a ground-based horse activity. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's grooming, maybe it's leading, maybe it's helping clean stalls. Mm-hmm. So there's still a horse activity component to that.
So we had, I did develop, dedicated an entire episode to that life skills program and the transition programming. So go back and listen to that if you are curious about how to develop that program further. It was really good. So I'll link that in the show notes. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So I think that's been one of the places we've seen the biggest growth. I think the second place we've seen a lot of growth in is in our therapy services program. Mm-hmm. And especially with the mental health component of things. I think that is almost a consistent thing we're seeing in new referrals, that there's some type of mental health diagnosis. Might be that's a standalone diagnosis. It might be that that is along with a physical diagnosis as well. And so really finding different ways to address that. We have been offering a group resiliency either for teens or young adults or adults. We've also offered a healing through hooves, which is more of a trauma-based mm-hmm. Program. Those are all ground-based programs. And so, again, we can have a group. So we might have 3 to 5 in that group. And typically, right now, we have 2 staff just because those could be more intense groups depending on what comes out. So we have 2 staff as well as a handful of volunteers that help. But again, it's ground-based, so it's not as taxing on our horses, which is really important.
And is set up similar to our life skills in that it's sort of, like you said, maybe some classroom work, maybe some, you know, like group work in that perspective, and then typically a horse activity or something to pair that with.
Absolutely. One of the really cool things that our therapists have done this year is that we've had some people that can't come to site for various reasons, maybe physical, maybe just getting here has been an issue. So they've actually done some telehealth, some Zoom sessions. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because they still include the horse. So they might be going into the horse's stall, they're on an iPad, and they're really still working through that and keeping connected with those people. And then as soon as possible, we get them back to site. But so we don't lose that connection, I think that's been a really cool addition as well.
And I think that's something cool to keep in mind because for some reason, that tends to be a barrier for us is that sort of transportation thing. And we are blessed to be sort of on the outside of a major city, Omaha. Gretna is right on the outside of Omaha. So we're really not that far away. But I think a lot of centers might have that where they might be in a rural community. You know, their barn's not in the middle of town.
Right.
So getting people to your facility can be tricky. And so thinking outside the box in that way.
And so that brings me to another program, which we offer is our miniature on-site learning program. Uh-huh. And that's where we take our minis to either schools, assisted living facilities, maybe day programs, and they actually offer curriculum. So it's not just a visit, pet the, meet the horse. It's a curriculum. Might be working on communication. It might be working on team building, nutrition, health, some social emotional learning things. So that has really allowed us to reach populations that can't maybe make it here to site mm-hmm. and start to introduce the idea of what we do and how we do it.
Yeah. And the wonderful woman that facilitates our mini programming is Cassidy Fredrickson. And she actually did a webinar for us about that program and how she does it and how she creates her curriculum. So I'll link that in the show notes too. I should probably have her on the podcast. That'd be a good conversation.
Yeah. She would definitely be a good one. She's done a great job of expanding that program, really doing the outreach to the schools as well as to the different, assisted living mm-hmm. facilities. And, it's really a neat thing to be involved in. I get to go usually about once a year and help out with one of those. And I really love that time.
And again, you're expanding your community outreach. You know, you're reaching tons more people than you were able to before you started that program. And it's typically one staff, maybe two staff, and then a volunteer, you know, or two to help you handle the minis. But that's another program that is, you know, doesn't require a ton of resources as long as you have a way to get them there. Right?
Exactly. And we can reach a lot of people with that programming. So mm-hmm. we could go to a school and they might bring four different groups out and each group might have 15 individuals in it. So that's a big outreach. So we really love that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the other thing that's really continued to grow is Hetra University mm-hmm. and this podcast and the educational piece. I think having been in this industry for over 30 years, we have a lot of very experienced, knowledgeable staff. And so providing some education to the EAS industry has become really a priority for us. And that's one of the things we try to do through this podcast, as well as Hetra University. And having our staff go and present at regional and national conferences on different topics. Mm-hmm. So I really am proud of the work that we've done with Hetra University and excited to see where it continues to go.
So my question to you is, why do we put so much work and effort into this education piece? Like, why does Hetra University exist for you, Edie?
Well, I think the initial piece of that was really providing quality education to individuals in the equine assisted mm-hmm. services industry. And, you know, there's some education out there and there's some good quality education out there. It used to be that you had to go somewhere in order to get that. And it used to be that cost a fair amount of money. And we know that, you know, we get into this line of work. Some people are volunteers, some people are being paid, but they're still volunteering a lot of their time. It's not a high pay industry. So we can't, and we can't necessarily budget for a big continuing education budget. So being able to provide reasonably priced opportunities for people to learn is really important. Again, I've been in this industry over 30 years. If I had the ability to mentor with someone, 30 years ago, boy, that would have changed things.
Saved you a headache or two, huh?
Yeah. I mean, not recreating the wheel and really learning from people that have been there, done that, and seeing how you can take some of those things and apply it to what you're doing is really important. I know one of the big things I see right now is people asking questions about grants and how do you get grants and how do you even start to look for grants. I know we just did a podcast mm-hmm. on that not too long ago. That's an important piece of your revenue stream mm-hmm. is grants and foundations, and building those relationships is really important. And I think as an industry, again, we're wearing a lot of hats. We're cleaning the stalls, we're mm-hmm. conditioning the horses, we're finding the volunteers, we're doing the sessions. How are we going to start to build a relationship with a foundation? And that's where I think, we have been able to get to kind of take that reactive mode off mm-hmm. and get into more of a proactive mode, at least at times. And so that we can continue to move the ball forward to where it needs to be in order to reach our goals.
Right. And I think the cool part about us is that our staff, I don't know what the percentage of our staff is, but we have a handful of staff that has been here with our center, like since the early days. Like you, when you, you know, first got started with Hetra, were you one of the first paid staff?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. But I'd been with Hetra probably 8 years before I was a paid staff.
Right. So it's like there was a time in your career where you wore, you know, 97 of the hats that we all sometimes wear, right?
Absolutely.
And so you can give that perspective of, you know what, I did do that.
Yep.
And now we are fortunate enough, like you said, to be in more of this kind of proactive role where we have, you know, some staff in place to really help us stay proactive. But it's not that we are naive to the situations in the centers that can't be that way, right?
No, absolutely not. And that's why I think this is an important education piece, because again, if this was available to me 20 years mm-hmm. ago, even, it would have made my life a lot easier. You know, we learned a lot of things by trial and error. And if we had some of that education piece, that would have made where we were going much easier. We wouldn't have had to do the research and the learning and mm-hmm. all of that. We would have just had that piece and said, okay, this makes sense. And now I can carry through on that part of it.
Right.
So yeah, I think, you know, sometimes in this industry, we see people who have been in the industry forever and they're, well, this is the way we do it. And this is the way we've always done it. And mm-hmm. this is the way we're going to continue to do it. I really try not to be that way. I mean, I think safety and, you know, good, solid programming is really, really important. But also looking at what else could we do? How else could we do it differently? How could we do it better? And really listening to the people that are doing it and knowing mm-hmm. what they feel like could make a difference is important. And so I think even just that mindset is important and being willing to make the changes that need to happen as the organization continues to grow.
Right. And I think that's what sets us apart as someone that provides education too, and that is that we're going to give you information on what we think is safe and what we think is quality. But we are also not shut down or closed off to the fact that you might have, you know, someone else might have a really great idea too. Let's take that. Let's learn from it. Let's, you know, keep our mind open and that door open to possibilities of greater change for our, because ultimately that yields greater success in our participants, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's the whole goal of this podcast mm-hmm. is to really be able to reach out to others in the industry and, you know, see what they're doing, how they're doing it, and then being able to pick what might work for us mm-hmm. from that information. And the podcast is free. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen to it on your way to work.
Nothing better than free.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. Listen to it on your way to work. Listen to it while you're cleaning stalls, whatever works for you. But it's a great way to get that education piece in and start to just explore in your mind, like what other things could we possibly do? I know you've interviewed a lot of different types of programs mm-hmm. and, you know, that gives people some, at least some food for thought, like, could we go that direction or could we go this direction?
Right. Absolutely. So Hetra prides itself in being flexible, staying adaptable, you know, being, if something happens, we're able to pivot, we're able to, you know, be malleable in that way. But what would you say is Hetra's like foundation? Like what rock do we stand on no matter what changes happen or what, you know, adaptations we have to make? What do we always go back to?
You know, I feel like we always go back to number one, safety. Mm-hmm. That is always the biggest thing for us is safety. I think quality of programming, you know, we could offer 10,000 things, but if it's not quality, that's not what we want to do. And I think another really foundation core for us is that we never want to turn somebody away for the inability to pay. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody comes to us and they need programming and they would benefit from programming, we're going to find a way to make it work for them, whether that's an external scholarship or an internal scholarship, whether it's our Drive to Ride program to help raise funds, we're going to figure out a way. But that is a core for us. Mm-hmm. Like if you can benefit from this programming, we want you here and we want you to benefit.
Mm-hmm. And I think that actually has kind of accidentally created some programming for us too sometimes where it's like, okay, this person needs to get plugged in. Maybe it's not riding every week. Maybe it's not this. Okay, what do we got? let's make an apprenticeship program. Let's make a, you know, let's get them plugged into a resiliency group or something like that, where it's, you know, they can get involved here and get their foot in the door and start to benefit from just being here.
And I think that's one of the ways we've also prevented from having a waiting list, because, you know, we evaluate somebody that wants to come into the program and maybe we don't have a spot for them to ride right now, but we can get them into the resiliency group or we can get them into the apprenticeship program. And then they're here, like you said, plugged in. And then as soon as we can transition them to other programs that are appropriate.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we've talked a lot about stuff that's been successful. What challenges have we experienced this year? Or what do you see as a global challenge kind of for our industry going into 2024?
I think horses is a challenge for us. I mean, I think we personally have 3 horses in our herd that will be 30 and or that are 30 by the time this goes on. And so figuring out how to work through retirement of those guys and replacement of those guys is hard. The horse industry right now is strong and it's expensive to buy a horse. It's expensive to do a pre-purchase, to travel, to look at horses, all of those things. And so I think horses, and I've heard that kind of throughout the United States is an issue, and finding the horses that are going to fit and be, you know, work in your program. And then also look at those horses and how you manage them, because we really work hard to try to manage our horses, so that they can work in our program a really long time. One of our 30-year-old, actually 2 of our 30-year-old horses, I bet have been with us 15, 17 years, something like that. So, but that comes back to the level of care that they get, so that they can continue to work. So horses is a big one.
So really quick, before you go on, we know that that has been a challenge. We recognize that. And so she's actually our program manager now, Shelby Schultz, but she was our equine operations manager for many, many years. She is doing a live webinar January 11th.
So yes.
It's coming up like in the next week or so, by the time you're listening to this, about equine strategic planning. So that's a huge thing. And I know like people hear strategic planning and they're like, but it's important and it's tedious, and Shelby makes it very digestible, very easy to understand. Just really, like you said, planning for how do we get horses in? How do we keep them, you know, get them conditioned? And then when do we retire those steady Eddie, you know, 30-year-old guys that have been with us and are, you know, amazing. But at some point you have to weigh the cost versus benefit, you know? So she's going to do that presentation.
Absolutely. You have to go back to that business side of things and see what is it really costing you to have that horse, and what is the programming they're able to do. And then we always owe them a good retirement.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thankfully have some ability to retire horses to different places, and that works really well. I know that it is a struggle for some programs, and so they end up keeping them for an extended period of time because they just don't have that, you know, that route in place that they can retire.
Right. So if you want to learn more about kind of how we do that and how we strategically plan our equines and our herd, I'll put that link in the show notes. She's going to do it live, so Q&A and all that stuff will be available, but then we will also release it as a recorded webinar too, if you're listening to this after the fact. Anyway, what are some additional challenges you think?
I think one of them has been probably donations. I've heard that a lot, again, throughout the industry, is that donations are down. In general, I think nonprofits are seeing donations are down. And just really looking at what are the other revenue funding sources that are available for organizations, and how do we keep ourselves, you know, again, following a good business model and, you know, in the black each year. So I think when we look at donations are down, we have to look at, again, what are those relationships that we are building, and are we spending time building those relationships? Because I think if we are, then you know, we are understanding that maybe that donor that did 5,000 last year can only do 2,500 this year, but they're still going to do the 2,500 because we have the relationship there. But if we don't have the relationship, they may just say, I'm not going to donate anything, or right. take that money and donate it other places. Mm-hmm. So I think really focusing on that piece of donations. And then really look at where you're spending your time. Like we got to a point in our organization where we had to look at our fundraising activities. And we had to say, like, if it's not able to bring in a substantial amount of revenue for the organization, and our staff is putting a substantial amount of time in order to put that event on, we can't continue that. Right. And we have to look at what are our other options. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here at Hetero, we only do one fundraising event, and that's Blue Jeans and Dreams. Mm-hmm. And then we do two other major campaigns, which are not extremely staff intensive. Mm-hmm. And that has been a really good model for us. And one of them is focused on the horses. So those people that really want to support the horses can, and one's focused on our participants. So it really reaches, I think, everybody out there.
Yeah. Broad spectrum for yep. sure. And I think going back to, like you said, just really doing an analysis of time spent, money spent, and then the income that happens, right? So yeah, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think those are the two big things, really, are donations and horses. I think volunteers are maybe still a little bit, I know for us, it's still yeah. a little bit of an issue. And volunteers more for us that are trained to that higher level for horse leading, mm-hmm. and we do have a pretty complex training and level system for our horse leaders, mm-hmm. Which makes it a little bit different. But also I think it improves the quality of our horses and of our sessions because yeah. of that. But having volunteers who are willing to kind of spend the time to continue to educate themselves mm-hmm. is sometimes really hard. So that horse leader piece of volunteers for us has been hard, mm-hmm. but we're getting there.
Yeah.
We're making progress. We've put some systems in place, but I think volunteers in general are hard. Especially if you're in a more, rural community where, you know, you just have a limited, you know, group of people. You know, you said we're right next to Omaha. Mm-hmm. We're right next to Lincoln, really, which are two of the biggest cities here. And so we're really able to pull from a pretty big yeah. volunteer pool. So we're pretty fortunate.
Right. Yeah. Just staying creative. I mean, honestly, when I think of all of these challenges, horses, donors, volunteers, it's really like, get creative and think outside the box on, you know, ways to make it work from all perspectives, right?
And that's where I think you've really got to go back to, you know, we have a great Facebook. It's called a group called Equine Assisted Services Executive Directors. Mm-hmm. That's a great Facebook group to go post out yeah. and get some ideas on. We have a mentoring program. Again, mm-hmm. great place. We have Ask Us Anything call mm-hmm. That we've done in the past. Again, just using those resources when you feel like you're blocked and you just can't think anymore of other things you could do. Use those resources to see what else are people doing and how are they being successful. And not only in our industry, but in other nonprofits as well. You know, look at what is the Humane Society doing? Mm-hmm. What is the food bank doing? What is, you know, the other really successful nonprofits in your area doing and being successful? Mm-hmm. Can you get a meeting with their executive director? Right. Can you have a conversation about what your challenges are and where they could potentially help you?
More often than not, you're going to find very kind people that just want to share their knowledge and experience so that we all can reach the people we need to do because we're in the nonprofit sector and we're here to help people. And
absolutely.
So most of the time, people running those organizations are kind as well.
Yes, absolutely. and you know, everybody's busy, but that, you know, people are glad to share their knowledge and their information and try to help people out.
Right.
Because again, we're just benefiting our community.
That's right. Okay, well, as we close here, do you have any closing thoughts? I have a question for you.
Oh, good.
I haven't prepped her with this.
Oh, yay.
In fact, I haven't even, usually we talk about it kind of as a group on what we want the closing question to be yeah. for the season.
So it's a surprise. All right, I'm ready.
This is, I'm just going to tell the audience, either this is going to be the question for the rest of the season or it's not. I don't know yet, but we'll see how it goes. This is the question.
Okay.
Edie, what is your golden rule? So like personally for you, it doesn't even really have to be related to EAS if you don't want it to be, but if, you know, you have children, if they didn't remember a single thing that you taught them ever, but they do remember that one golden rule that, you know, Edie taught me, what would it be?
Wow. That's a good question. I like it.
Do you like it?
Yeah, okay. I do like it. I do like it. It takes a little bit of thought though. I would say my golden rule, the thing that I guess I would like to be known for is that I helped where I could, you know, and we were able to make our community better, and we were able to impact lives, mm-hmm. individual lives. And that's what's always been important to me. And I think that's what we've been able to do here.
Love that. Great close on the episode. Well, thank you for stopping by. You'll be here several times, I'm sure, in 2024. yeah, thanks for helping me kick off the fourth season. I'm excited for what's to come. Stay plugged in, get over on our Facebook group and some other places, Patreon, you can get plugged in. New to 2024, Instagram. So come check us out and on all those platforms. I'll link that in the show notes and hopefully we'll see everyone down the road, but especially you, Edie.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Edie. I always leave our conversations feeling super inspired and motivated, so I hope that you feel the exact same way. I was just popping on quick because honestly, I want to hear from you. Our listeners in this community is really what drives the podcast and everything we do at Hetra University. So I want to know, what challenges did you or your center experience in 2023? Where do you think our industry is headed? Also, I want to celebrate your wins. We want to know what went well, what things really took off at your centers. So scroll down. There's a link to a quick 3-question survey. You can put as little or as much time into it as you want. I'll put the link there, and I also put it on